You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Liza, and no Kristen here today. We are going to be doing a solo show on family caregiving. And when I say we, I do have some amazing guests with me. I have my wonderful husband, Mr. Michael Kroot, and our awesome son, Caden Kroot. So we are just going to spend some time talking about our personal family caregiving experience. So I'll just jump right in. Well, first of all, thank you, Mike, for joining me.
Sure. I was thinking, what am I, a chap liver?
But yes, exactly.
Exactly.
You know that I know that you know. So our caregiving journey started, Caden's 19 now?
Yes.
So 17 years ago-ish. You know, we knew at around 12 months, Caden wasn't meeting his milestones. I think we had a little bit of denial.
I had denial. Yeah. You sensed it earlier than I.
Well, that wasn't my first rodeo. But yeah, so we reached out to birth to three, I think at 18 months, and had them come in. And, you know, when they began working with him, Caden was oblivious to the fact that they were even there, you know? So we both knew, whoa, something is not right here. And then we started our search, right, for what's going on with our kiddo. So I think by age three, he did get the autism diagnosis, and we continued with birth to three. We started working with Wisconsin Early Autism Project, and I think I was all in, right? 110%, rolled up my sleeves. Everything was autism 24/7. We did speech, OT, vision therapy, social skills group, worked with alternative medicine doctors, special diets, you name it, we did it. And if you recall, autism was not covered by insurance at that time. It was considered a pre-existing condition. So we also had the joy of spending time at the Capitol and doing some advocating. What are your thoughts, Mike, or what's your take on our early days of the caregiving experience?
I just remember you diagnosed our son, and then you sought pediatricians to see what you were seeing. And the first pediatrician, because Caden, like all kids with autism and all kids, is a unique kid. And he was affectionate, and he looked you in the eye. And our esteemed, well-regarded local pediatrician said, well, he doesn't have autism. He'll give you a hug. Well, this autistic kid did. And you didn't accept that. I was much more willing. I was much more wanting to hear, Einstein didn't talk until he was two. And your kid will catch up. You know, he's just a late bloomer. Well, I didn't know. I wanted that to be the case. And those that don't know our story, we were about to get on a plane in Mexico. You were very pregnant with our last child, with Karsten. And you went online and you found an autism checklist. And you pointed out to me through tears, you know, our kid checks like 23 of 26 boxes here. And I just remember you took books and we went on a beach and we went through our stages of grief because we thought this diagnosis was somehow a life sentence for Caden. And you clearly committed yourself to changing our son's life. And my part has been secondary.
Well, thank you for that, I guess. We both went all in, and the evolution of not only, you know, of Caden himself, but also what autism is and what that means. And, you know, all of that has changed so much through the years. You know, you just said we thought this was a life sentence. Well, I don't think that at all, you know. And
well, with 17 years hindsight,
right,
and his tremendous development through his hard work and his therapist's hard work and your hard work. And what people may not realize is, we were glad to have treatment options. Many families didn't. The wonderful people at Wisconsin Early Autism Project started coming to our house every 2 hours on the hour. And those that don't know my wife, she likes a clean house. Certainly have companies coming over. And I would watch you, hon. I would watch you clean this house. You would scrub, well, not this house, but top to bottom. Seemingly every 2 hours, your entire day was keeping the house clean for the next therapist. And of course, the whole time they're there, between him and the baby and the dogs, there was always chaos. There was always something to be cleaned. And I have always admired the commitment you made, hon, because all I had to do was go to work and hopefully pay for it. That's the easy part.
Sometimes it was easy.
Sometimes it was awfully hard to pay for it. But
and that's where the advocating and lobby work came in. And I remember you speaking with who's your bestie from Richland Center?
My bestie from Richland Center is former twice elected Senate Majority Leader Dale Schultz. Mm-hmm. And I had the opportunity to meet Dale through our lobbying on behalf of the autism mandate. And former Governor Jim Doyle spent a lot. I wasn't a huge Doyle fan, but he spent a lot of political capital doing the right thing by families with kids of that had autism or that their children had the diagnosis. And you don't get better without treatment. You get worse. And we went through and we saw the numbers. And of course, we're seeing it through the prism of our own child's experience. But the waiting list was 18 months and the kids weren't getting better. They were waiting and regressing. We saw our son lose certain skills. So the prognosis that you've got to wait 18 months to get any sort of relief, if you're lucky, and get in line and hope for the best was untenable. And it was a bad financial decision for state governance, because if these kids didn't get early intervention, they were never going to get to a skill set where they'd be able to go to college or to participate in the workforce or pay taxes or not be, and I would hate to think my child's a liability, but to not be a liability. So it was smart to force insurance companies to take care of this early treatment, to treat it not like a pre-existing condition, but treat it like any other condition. And the autism mandate was scored. It went through the Senate. We talked to Dale. And you know, your dad lives out there. And I got into Dale's office. Hey, you know, my father-in-law is a constituent. I'd really like to talk to you. Dale's a very reasonable man. But Mike Kipsch, who was the head of the assembly speaker at the time, went on to be Scott Walker's DOA secretary. Kipsch killed that bill in the middle of the night at 1 in the morning for the benefit of the insurance company against the taxpayers and against families like ours that had a kid waiting for service and a family going broke trying to pay for it privately. Jim Doyle stuck it in the budget the next year and he pushed it through and the autism mandate became law here. It's a big deal to us and a lot of other families.
It definitely was. But I remember Dale Schultz at the time not being down for it, that it would cost way too much. The insurance system would explode. They could never handle that cost. And we had Caden with us, and it took Caden a long time to get potty trained for whatever reason. And he took a big old dump in Dale Schultz's office, I remember. And
sure,
I just,
you want to talk about this on the radio?
I just remember thinking
teenager sitting next door.
That a boy. There's some advocating for you, but it worked. It went through, but until that time, we did try to pay for as much of it as we could out of pocket, and that it was strapping.
It was, yes, it was beyond our means often.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't only that. I mean, you made career decisions. You made life decisions. the other kids in our household, Kelsey, our beautiful daughter, and Karsten, our ever more muscular and handsome son, those kids also sacrificed for the right to have you make the necessary commitment to get Caden to the level he's at today.
They did, and I'm still playing, I think, catch up with some of them today, because it was Caden. It was 24/7 Caden. I was driven and determined to do whatever I had to do to get him to where he needed to be, and for many different reasons. I mean, some for his benefit, right? So he can go out and sure. succeed in the world, and some just my broken knowledge, you know, my naive knowledge at the time that, oh no, I made a broken kid. I've got to fix him. I can fix this. I'm going to fix this. And again, I appreciate how I've evolved and matured and changed through the years, because there's absolutely nothing to fix. And we had the Down Syndrome Society on DSAW last week, and I just, you know, was just taken back by just the pride that they have of these kiddos, you know. And it's never doom or gloom or statistics. It's just all about their abilities, and you know, these are great contributing members of society, and it's just such a positive way to look at it. And you know, that's my thoughts about Caden now. But I, you know, I'm sure when you first find out, you have to go through this process, right?
Well, it's like anything else. You go through grief, you go through denial, you go through all the stages.
Exactly. And I can't wait. After our commercial break, we're going to have Caden come in, and we are going to hear Caden's take on all of this. You're listening to The Empowered Caregivers, and we'll be right back after this short break. Show where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Liza Hellenbrand. I'm your host today. No co-host Kristen. So we are going to be talking today, or we have been talking, I should say, about my family's personal caregiving story and journey. And we have with us now a super special guest, Mr. Caden Crute, my son. And so we were saying, Caden, that you were diagnosed with autism by the time you were 3 years old. And I know that's pretty early on, but do you remember us kind of explaining autism to you?
So my first radio show that I was on when I was probably like 9 years old, Dad mentioned autism in one of his sentences. I knew it was like a pretty big word, but when I thought about it and asked about it, that's when I like learned more about it, and I thought, geez, that's kind of a big thing, special thing.
It is, and I remember writing a social story for you. And so social story, many of you probably know, especially if you have children on the autism spectrum, is just kind of when you explain things out in a story in a way that makes sense to the listener. So I remember making this social story about how Caden had autism and he had superpowers and he was super special. And I remember a brief moment where you kind of walked around and said, I don't know how to say this, but I'm kind of a big deal, right? You remember that? because you thought you were really special because you had, because you, well, number one, you are, right? And number two, you were learning about autism and how it made you unique. And it was kind of cool, I think, you know, when we first learned about it and how you were special and different. Can you tell the listeners about some of the therapies and about some of the things that you did for your autism treatment?
I used to have therapists come to my house when I was like really young. Mm-hmm. I was probably like a toddler when I first remember a therapist coming to my house. Yeah. And I went to lots of clinics like CI. I did that like many years ago.
Yeah.
To get some of the treatment. It was a pretty good fit because then that got me into the whole Wisconsin early autism thing,
mm-hmm.
which I do to this day. And I remember starting up at the Wolfpack group, and then that turned into the after school program, which resulted in the teen group, which I am currently still am. Since I'm 19 years old, I'm still in the teen group.
Yep. And you're like the longest standing member of the social skills group. I remember when you were like 4 years old, they said, okay, we're going to start this group and get some of these kids together and work on social skills and interacting and playing with each other. And I said, great. So we did that weekly when you were four, and 15 years later, still taking you weekly, right? But it's a super cool group with a bunch of great kids.
They had an old building that I used to go to. Some of the people that were there today were not there, but some of the people that kind of go there to this day went there by the time we were in the new building.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are not there anymore. That's just like when the whole Wolfpack group started, because then I joined, you know, after school program for 2 years in middle school, and then teen group started for me.
Yep. You did lots of different things.
Now the teen group has gotten like really cool, especially after the pandemic as far as this year.
Yeah. Yeah. The pandemic definitely was a hard time. But I think during the pandemic, you really matured a lot, right? That online school was tough, and you didn't have all the support that you have in the school building. So you really had to step up your game, and you absolutely knocked it out of the park, Caden. I would love for you to be able to tell parents that have a child with autism maybe some good advice. What would you want to tell parents that have a child with autism?
Well, if you have a kid with autism, you got to know that's going to have some meaningfulness to it, whether they're like higherly functioning or low functioning. And another thing you should know is that it's good that you're teaching us things, because it could result in some learning disabilities, but that also could result us being smart in also like very little ways that some people that can sometimes get taken by surprise. Like, I know some people myself that, you know, seemed like they had a little bit learning needs, but in the meantime, they had like background stuff about them, or like stuff they were like really good at. And I have that too, as you guys should probably know.
Oh, absolutely. We know.
And you got fans walking down University Ave waving. Yeah, they waving saw you in here, Caden.
Yeah. Yep.
So the show that I do, Caden, is about family caregivers. So I would be considered your caregiver. So I'm just curious, what are some things that you think I've done good with as being your caregiver? And what are some things do you think I can work on? And be gentle.
Some things you've done good is you take me, some things you've done good is you've signed me up for cranial programs I like, and when I do like them, I continue them, and you give me the help that, I need most of the time, and, you're pretty helpful for me most of the time, like, when there's something going on, like, society, like, you'll kind of explain it to me a little bit, like, then it can feel like it's a little bit more chill at those times.
Yeah, and then it's almost time for a commercial, so you have just a few seconds, but what can I work on?
Well, something you got to work on is, like, when I'm having my moments, you got to be, like, you got to remain calm about it. You got to remain kind of calm about it. And something you got to work on is, like, when I'm having my moments of, like, tics or stuff like that, you also got to be patient about that, too, because you do know I am in college and I have to deal with loud neighbors all the time. So if someone with autism has to deal with it, I think you can deal with it, too.
I think you're right. I will start working on that right away. Thank you so much, Caden. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I am your host, Liza Hellenbrand, flying solo tonight, and we are talking about, well, I guess our family's personal caregiving journey and story. And I'm here with my wonderful husband, Mr. Mike Crute. And typically in the third segment, we do what is called powerful questions. And so I'm going to put you on the hot seat, Mike, and ask you a few questions to catch you off guard. That's my hope. Yep, right. So your mom lobbied for foster care parents that cared for children with special needs. Can you tell us a little bit about that experience and how it impacted you as a child?
Sure. My mom, who's been pretty instrumental in shaping the man I was, for good or for bad, but my mom had ovarian cancer and knew that she was going to be incapable of having more children. She went back to college, got a degree in behavioral disabilities when a lot of people were going back to school post-Vietnam War. And she had graduated from here at UW-Madison, and she wanted to help a child. And my brother and I met a child named Joseph, who became part of our family. And he was severely disabled cognitively and otherwise, had multiple disabilities. And he came into our home and she worked with him. And over the course of, I would say, about 8 years, we saw amazing progress. He learned how to talk. He learned how to do mathematical computations. He learned a lot of things. And my mom, through her experience, learned that the compensation levels were ridiculously low. And when you've got special needs kids, some have orthopedic shoes and whatever the case may be. Well, these were 1970, late 70s numbers, but the first child was like $152 a month. The second child was like $68 a month. And I don't care what year you live in, you can't raise a child for that. So it was disincentivizing good people from being foster parents. My mom personally lobbied after Lee Dreyfus left. Tony Schreiber became the governor. Lieutenant Governor Schreiber eventually signed into law what my mom had worked very hard with Carol Brandstetter and a few other foster parents. About 1980, they signed into law higher compensation rates for children in foster care. And you know my story, hon, as fate would have it. My mom died from cancer a few years later. I found myself going from family member to family member, and eventually I came back to Wisconsin and I ended up as a kid in foster care. And I feel like my experience was relatively stable, safe. I never got beat up. I never got molested, any of those things. And there were good families that had entered into foster care. And I actually went through a couple of families, but I was the first child in every case. These were newly recruited families. And I feel like my mom's work to get somewhat fairer compensation rates for these families paved the way for, a safe high school existence and hopefully a relatively gainful adulthood.
She sounds like she was such an amazing woman. I wish I would have had the opportunity to meet her, but you saw firsthand at a young age some of the caregiving journey, you know, with the work and the time that your mom put in with Joseph. And how did that impact you?
I think certainly I felt like probably our children feel, those that aren't cadence sometimes, and that is you want a greater piece of your, for me, my mom was the only parent in the household. I wanted more of my mom at times. I understood, but as a kid, you're selfish. You know, you don't see the altruistic good she's doing for another human being. You just want more time with your mom. So like all other selfish kids, I saw that aspect of it. The other thing that was weird is Joseph was self-abusive just randomly at times. We'd go out of old Westtown Mall here in Madison, and this kid would have a bad day, and he would literally start banging his head on the concrete fountains they used to have there to the point of bloodying himself. And my mom would try to restrain him, and it was not predictable or logical what would trigger this. And she would go to stop him, and someone would call the cops on her, and we would have security guards or cops or whatever, and she would just let go and say, okay, then you stop him.
Mm.
And they would realize that this was not some woman abusing her child. This was a woman stopping this child that would illogically self-harm himself in public places like Westtown Mall, which is traumatic if you see it, but that became part of our family. And that happened about once a year, maybe not at Westtown, but I remember specifically it happened at Westtown.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember at Westtown with Caden, they had like these kind of marble shiny floors, and it completely threw him off. Mm. You know, he'd put his hands out and just walk like he was going to fall over, and that was one of our earliest memories of me watching him being like, this isn't normal. But, you know, it's a little bit tricky being a caregiver to a child, right? Because that's typically seen as being a parent. You know, so it's kind of hard to differentiate those two. But when it comes to being a caregiver to a child with special needs or disabilities, is it's the extra, right? It's all of the stuff that you take on besides just being a parent. You know, the therapies, the doctors, the IEPs, the research, you know, and it can be a full-time job. It was a full-time job for me for a long time. But in the caregiver role, what is something that you've taken delight in doing with Caden?
I'm not sure if I exactly understand the question, but I have a few really good memories for the year. Years when he was a kid, and this kid is fearless. Caden is literally fearless of heights, of crazy stuff. You know, he'd go on the cranium shaker or whatever. But Caden, when he was a kid, I would literally throw him around the basement from couch to mattress, and he would be Spider-Man. And when he was a very little kid, I would come home every night, and we had a routine. We would play air hockey and dance to John Mayer songs. And it was, he was such a creature of habit that was our thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to this day, we have certain things that are kind of our thing. Mom goes to bed, and when he's home from college, he and I sit up and mess with each other to this day. You know, we're like all men do, but it's our thing.
He likes to poke. Like he likes to poke at you and push.
He does
your,
like to
and
poke at
push
this
your
guy.
Buttons.
He does push buttons.
Yeah, yeah. So knowing that Caden is always going to be a responsibility of ours to some degree, right? Mm-hmm. We've got one that's left the nest and is doing hair for movie stars, and we beg for her to reach out to us and talk to us, right?
Please come home.
Please come home for Christmas, Kelsey. But Caden, he's always going to be there. He's always going to need us. What are your some of your greatest fears in that regard?
The only fear I have for Caden is he's such a helpful human being. There are those that may try to take advantage of his generous nature.
Mm-hmm.
I worry about him financially, as we all worry about our children financially, but he's not financially sophisticated, and people try to prey on less financially sophisticated people. That's my only real fear, quote unquote fear, is that, you know, someone takes it away from him what meager dollars he may have, and he's left wanting, or he's left homeless, or he's left in some dire strait because we haven't created a structure, a savings, a housing plan for him that creates a sense of permanence where we can die someday.
Right. Yeah. I see that when I see the homeless people or the people on the corner, I think that's somebody's kid, right? Yeah. Somebody raised that person, and what happened to them, and could that be Caden? It's definitely a fear of mine.
I've not to interrupt. I know you've got more questions, but I've also, he's grown so much that I am so proud of the opportunities that life will give him because he works so hard.
Right, right. And Evan's given us a hand signal. We have a caller. Is that correct?
We sure do. We've got Joe from Madison, one of our favorites.
Hey, Joe.
Oh, it's sweet of you to say. Hi, I was interested to join the discussion, if I could. Calvin, I can recall a warm summer afternoon when I was working in my backyard listening to your dad's show, and you were a guest on that show. And at that time, you were talking about work that you were doing as a video editor. I believe you were maybe still in high school at that point. I'm not quite sure. But I'd be interested to hear your reaction about how that fits for you as an activity to do, and how you feel about it. I have a bit of background in television, and I know the importance of editing in terms of creating story and mood and rhythm and all. Are you still interested in editing? Is that still something that you pursue? And what are your thoughts about that? And I'll take my answer off air.
All right. Well, that is an excellent question. Unfortunately, we left Caden go. We let him off the hook, so he's in the other room. But I can tell you that he started that through Camp Creatability, which is located here in Madison. And same deal. He started as the youngest one. I think he was like 8 years old or something like that. And he took it up all the way until last summer. And he really enjoyed it. And I think it's a good fit for a lot of kiddos. And, you know, when they find that niche and they're patient, and now Camp Creatability is actually employing, those with disabilities, and they help transfer, photos into digital products, digital video. And then also I think like CDs and cassettes into, a digital format. So I think that it could be a perfect fit for a lot of kids on specifically on the spectrum. What's your take, Mike?
Sure. I think a lot of kids that are on the spectrum like the repetitive nature of videotape. You can go back and watch it over and over again. And God only knows how many times he's watched some of the same YouTube videos. But I think in this day and age, you can be a creator. And the other day, he pranked his brother's buddy and stole his phone, hid it under the thing, and like did a little video production and circled it and, you know, like laid out the prank. And you know what? And I saw it. And I'm not a big fan of the YouTube prank channels, but I thought to myself, but that's a well-produced little video. That's a neat thing. And I don't know if his avocation will be in video, but he loves working at Marcus Theater. Mm-hmm. He still loves movies. And in fact, if you'll recall, hon, that is how we discovered that Caden's got a wonderful ability, sort of a memory thing. This
hyperthymesia?
Yes. He remembered all of the release dates of a number of movies, and he was so movie-centric. He gave him the list, and he gave you the release dates. You said, well, how do you know? Well, I just remember these things.
Yeah, I remember that. But I wanted to, he wasn't familiar with, you know, Google and Google search and using the internet. And I wanted to him to know that, you know, that's a resource where you can go for information. So I gave him a list of movies, and I can't remember the exact assignment, but he came up with a list of movies, and next to it, he put these dates. And I'm like, what are these dates? And he's like, that's the release date. And I'm like, where did you find that on the internet? Like, I'm, and he's like, I didn't find it on the internet. I just know it. And I'm like, wait, what? All right, you go play. And I did my research, and he had them all correct. And I was just like, what? Yeah. And he's pretty proud of that.
Well, he's got some amazing skills. He can tell you, if you tell him your birthday, he can tell you what day of the week you're born on, mm-hmm. what day the birthday is going to fall on this year. If he doesn't win himself a few beers in life, that is a skill wasted.
It's got to be good for something. It's awesome to know, like, hey, Caden, when was the day that I got my oil changed last? Or, you know, all that fun stuff. You're listening to the Power Caregiver Show, and we'll be right back after this short break. Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. I'm your host, Liza Hellenbrand. No Kristen this evening. So we've been talking about our family's personal family caregiving story. And I know when I proposed the Empower Caregiver to Mike that I wanted to have a show on this, it wasn't because Mike had a show and now I wanted a show. I felt like this is an important issue that nobody talks about. And quite frankly, a lot of people just don't get it. You know, they feel like it's your familial duty, right, to care for those people in your family that you love and want to make sure are safe and okay. And that is 100% true, but there's a lot more to it than that. And I am a statistic person. I love me some statistics. And Mike, you can tell me when to stop. But there's a few things out there that really caught my eye and felt like this is something that needs a microphone, that needs to be talked about. The Survival Coalition did a family caregiver survey back in 2021 that came out in 2022, and it showed that families provide 80% of the care for children and adults with disabilities and older adults. One out of three are expected to continue caregiving the next 30 years. Four of five have been caregivers for at least 10 years. And in a 24-hour period, one of two are providing more than 12 hours of care per day. That's a lot. You know, that is a lot for any one family. And a lot of times when there are no paid caregivers to step in and help the family caregivers, it throws the family caregivers' world life into crisis, right? In any given week, three out of five spend more than 40 hours a week, or the equivalent of a full-time job, on caregiving duties. So I felt like this was an issue that really needs to be addressed, because it impacts a lot of people, primarily women, and not only, you know, physical, mental toll. It impacts our ability to have gainful employment, our ability to contribute to a 401k or Social Security. And there is a lot of studies out there of the direct health implications of carrying this job in addition to possibly another job or caring for other kids or, you know, trying to live your life. We started the show by saying some of the advocacy work that we did early on with Caden when autism was not covered by insurance, and you know, we did our little part, right, to try to change that, and luckily it was changed. Right now, Governor Evers has some listening sessions. Unfortunately, two have passed. There's one coming up in Green Bay, and you can also write in online.
Virtually attend,
correct. Yeah, and I posted the link on our Facebook page, the Empower Caregiver Community. You can also find the information. I got the information through the Wisconsin Board for People with Developmental Disabilities. So it's an easy way to do your part, to do your advocacy work and check that box. And some things that they are asking for is, of course, stabilization and increase to paid caregiver, for the caregivers, excuse me, that are doing this as a profession, right? To make it a career. It's so disheartening when you can make, you know, $5 more per hour working at Quick Trip than you can for caring somebody, you know, caring for somebody in need. So there's a lot of changes that need to be there. But in regards to family caregivers, some things that they're throwing out there that they're advocating for, that you can ask for, is to create employee-funded state insurance to offer paid family and medical leave for part-time and full-time employees. Also to expand who can use family and medical leave to include grandparents, grandchildren, and siblings. Also, there is establishing a family caregiving tax credit that allows taxpayers to deduct up to $7,200 per year, which is the average annual out-of-pocket expense incurred by family caregivers, and then also to increase respite funding, which would all of them would make a big difference. So if you're able to get online and, you know, tell your story, tell what would impact you, there's a lot that can be done to support family caregivers. And quite frankly, there's a lot that needs to be done to support family caregivers. You know, we're truly the backbone of the nation. And without us, things are going to fall apart quickly. What's your two cents on it, Mike?
We definitely need home health care workers. We definitely need paid caregivers. And you're right. There's not a lot of respect given to the positions, not in a paid regard, and certainly not when the labor is free, when it's obligated upon the parents, on the children, on the son-in-law, the daughter-in-law, whatever the case may be. The state of Wisconsin has resources. Lots and lots of resources. We are sitting on the biggest budget surplus in our state's history, $6.6 billion. So far, mostly I've heard about proposed tax cuts. But what you're talking about is an investment in human beings. And my greatest concern is partisanship is so prevalent. There's not a common ground often in the governance in the state of Wisconsin. So there's one legislative piece. It's all about the budget. And it's up to the governor to craft a budget. The Joint Finance Committee will rewrite it and do it all over again. And then Tony Evers, the governor, through the veto pen, will need to better that document in any way possible to make it better for caregivers and anyone else. He wants to help. But in terms of cooperation, a legislative remedy, that's not the way this state's set up currently. And it's too bad because there are people suffering that could use some help.
Yeah. And if ever there was a bipartisan issue, wouldn't it be this? This impacts 1 in 5 people. You know, they say either you are a caregiver, you will be a caregiver, you've been a caregiver, or you're going to need a caregiver, right? So how they can say no to this is a little beyond me, but I guess that's the government for you, huh?
Well, that is the government under the circumstance that it's gerrymandered and it's not reflective of the will of the people.
Thank you for listening to The Empowered Caregiver. I was hoping to have a conversation with Evan about his recent caregiving story, and we'll get to it next time we're all together, because you just get thrown into it.
I can't wait.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, and have a great night.